DW Deutsche Welle. Spectrum. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun.
I say it's all right. Hello and welcome to Spectrum, coming to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. I'm Gudrun Heise. On today's programme, the total eclipse of the sun on Monday, the 21st of August in the United States. I'll be speaking to my colleague Dirk Lorenzen. He experienced this phenomenon live. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say, it's all right. We'll hear some interesting facts about the sun, and visit researchers in Switzerland who are trying to find out what kind of influence the sun has on our lives. That and more right here on Spectrum. Those who have experienced an extraordinary event like an eclipse say it's the most amazing thing they've ever seen. That includes my colleague, Dirk Lorenzen. He knows all about the moon, the stars and the sun, and he was in Jackson, Wyoming when the eclipse happened. He's now on the phone. Hello, Dirk. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Gudrun.
Well, I've never seen a total eclipse of the sun. You've seen it many times. What is the most fascinating thing about it for you?
It's just you feel the power of nature. I mean, it starts with just it was a regular sunny day. And then, well, it starts with this partial phase. So the moon starts to block the sun. And so it's pretty normal. But then as it progresses, it's really strange. So dark outside, the colors disappear. It's a bit grayish, whatever outside. And then the sun disappears in the middle of the day. And all of a sudden, you can see this black circle, the new moon blocking the sun. And around is this wonderful, this beautiful corona, a feather-like structure with long streamers around the sun. That's really, well, absolutely amazing. You see the brightest planets and stars in the sky in the middle of the day. So it's at the same time tantalizing and terrifying, I like to say, because we humans, we are just not made for it, that the sunlight is blocked in the middle of the day. And that's, once again, I have to say that. So you just feel the power of nature.
It gets dark all of a sudden, but what else happens?
You see the birds, they stop singing and they start singing again once the sun reappeared. For them, it's like a second morning. Yeah, really, it is absolutely amazing. They stop singing. You see the birds flying back to their nests. So you just see that even the animals feel something is strange here. Well, what the hell is going on here? So, and then they restart the day, let's say. So it's like a restart button for the day. It's getting much colder, so you feel that the heat from the sun has disappeared. So it's a multidimensional experience, and with nature, with your personal senses, with your mind, with your heart, it's absolutely overwhelming.
Dirk, how do astronomers describe a total eclipse?
It's all about light and shadow, and there are three bodies involved: the moon, the Earth, and the sun, of course. And the moon passes exactly between sun and Earth, and when that happens, the moon casts its shadow on the surface of the Earth, and if you are in the shadow, then you can't see the sun anymore. That's called a total solar eclipse.
How long does an eclipse normally last?
They are pretty short. In theory, a total solar eclipse could be as long as 7.5 minutes, but usually they are much shorter, only 2 or 4 minutes long. My first eclipse lasted 45 seconds only, and the maximum of this eclipse on Monday was just by 2 minutes, 40 seconds. So eclipses are a very short, but very funny event.
And how often do these eclipses happen?
Globally seen, total solar eclipses are quite frequent. There are on average 2 eclipses for every 3 years. But now, that's an important point, at a given location, solar eclipses are extremely rare because the zone of totality is a long, long strip, often more than 10,000 kilometers long, but only about 100 kilometers wide. The theoretical maximum is 250, but sometimes you even have a strip with a width of only 50 kilometers. So you have to be in the right spot. So at a given location on Earth, you will experience a total solar eclipse only once in about 300 years.
What exactly is the scientific interest?
Well, astronomers are keen to observe the sun's atmosphere, the corona, as detailed as possible, because this corona, so this this feather-like structure that can be seen surrounding the new moon, so because the sun's surface is blocked, this corona, this atmosphere, is a very odd feature. It consists of tenuous gas that has a temperature of about, 2 million degrees centigrade. However, the sun's surface underneath the atmosphere is only 5,500 degrees hot. So it's like you have a cold...
Only.
Yeah, only. Well, of course, it's pretty hot to our standards. But there is something above the atmosphere. But there's something above the surface that's much, much hotter. It's like you have in your kitchen a cold stove with a pot of boiling water on it. So that's pretty strange. And there are a few hints that some magnetic phenomena heats the corona to its millions of degrees. But in order to study this phenomena or these processes in detail, the astronomers need to observe this transition zone of the surface and the corona. And even nowadays, with all the high tech, with several solar telescopes in space, the innermost part of the sun's atmosphere can be best observed during a total solar eclipse. That's why astronomers are so keen to get into this narrow strip of totality.
And what have astronomers learned from eclipses so far?
Well, of course, they have some insights now what's happening in the solar corona and the sun's atmosphere. So they see that there are magnetic structures, the overwhelming power that drives all this, but still the details are just not well understood. So they study the sun's atmosphere further. But during a total solar eclipse, there was one very important discovery in 1919. So the astronomers have observed the sun, and they tried to measure the position of stars just next to the sun, and then they discovered that the light is deflected as the light beams pass nearby the sun, and this effect was predicted by Einstein's theory of general relativity. And as I said, so astronomers confirmed that in 1919 during a total solar eclipse, because they compared the position of stars next to the sun with measurements they did half a year before, so when the sun was not in this area. And this was really a very exciting event back in 1919. Albert Einstein has published his famous theory in 1915, but this was pretty much unknown, at least to the general public. But he became a celebrity only 4 years later when his colleagues have confirmed predictions of its theory, and they confirmed it during a total solar eclipse.
Well, when is the next eclipse and where can it be seen?
Well, the next total solar eclipse is in July 2019 in the South Pacific and in Chile and in Argentina. So, and nature really seems to love these two countries, because the following eclipse in December 2020 hits Chile and Argentina again, however different parts of these countries, as well as the South Atlantic. So you have to wait for 2019 or 2020. And yeah, if you would ask me about Germany, so we have to wait another 64 years for the next total solar eclipse in Germany. And sorry, Gudrun, I don't want to be rude, but this doesn't work out for you, so you better start to travel to eclipses.
My colleague Dirk Lorenzen there talking to me about the total solar eclipse in the United States. Thank you, Dirk.
Thanks a lot.
The total eclipse of the sun seems like a good enough reason to collect some interesting facts. Well, first of all, the sun is a star. It's a hot ball consisting of glowing gases, and it's the heart of our solar system. The annual average distance between our Earth and the sun is around about 150 million kilometers. Brigitte Ostrat has some more facts and figures. They are presented by Emma Wallace.
Our sun. It's just an average star in the universe. In fact, there are billions of stars just like our sun scattered across the Milky Way. It is special for us, though. Our sun made life on Earth possible by providing us with light and just enough heat, but not so much as to burn us to death. Let's have a closer look at our life-giving star. Compared to Earth, the Sun is huge. With 1.4 million kilometres or 900,000 miles across, more than 1 million Earths would fit inside our Sun. It weighs as much as 330,000 Earths. Nobody has ever set foot on the Sun, and no one ever will. First of all, it's much too hot. Its surface burns away at 5,500 degrees Celsius or 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Its center is even hotter, about 15 million degrees Celsius or 27 million degrees Fahrenheit. More important though, the Sun has no solid ground. It's simply a ball of super-hot gas. "90% of the Sun consists of hydrogen. The rest is helium and a few heavier elements like oxygen, iron and carbon. The Sun is impressive because it has perfected a process that researchers on Earth would love to master, that of nuclear fusion. The Sun is constantly burning hydrogen, fusing two hydrogen atoms together to form one helium atom. This process generates huge amounts of energy and radiation, which travel through the universe and warm up our planet. Looking at the Sun means looking 8 minutes into the past. That's the time light needs to travel from the Sun to the Earth. So, if the Sun was to be switched off now, it would take us 8 minutes even to notice. But then, it would become pitch black on Earth. Moreover, our planet would cool down below freezing within a week. 2 months later, it would be minus 120 degrees Celsius or minus 190 degrees Fahrenheit. Much too cold for us and all plants and animals to survive for long. But don't worry, researchers expect the Sun to continue shining for at least another 5 billion years. But at some point after that, the Sun will indeed run out of hydrogen. It will turn into a so-called red giant, expanding to around 250 times its current radius. During this process, the Sun would likely swallow up the Earth. The good news is we still have another 5 billion years to look for a new home. Another Sun-like star with a planet orbiting it at just the right distance.
The Sun has been of great interest to scientists for a long time. Solar research is its own scientific field. The experts in this field are looking into the physical, chemical and astronomical aspects of our closest star. What kind of effects do the Sun's rays have on our weather, on humans, animals and plants? That's what Swiss researchers are trying to find out. Dietrich Karl Meurer went to visit them in Davos. Susan Holten has his report.
Recently at the Physical Meteorological Observatory in Davos in Switzerland, the Institute staff are watching a live broadcast of a rocket launch from the spaceport Baikonur in Kazakhstan.
Bis jetzt alles top. Super.
The rocket takes the measuring probe Clara up into space. Clara is a cube with a 15-centimetre edge length crammed with technology. It weighs about 2 kilograms and was developed and built at the Davos Observatory. The launch has succeeded. The researchers are celebrating. At a height of 600 kilometres or 370 miles, Clara will soon measure how much energy the Sun emits. This is Manfred Gayo, an electronic engineer at the Davos Observatory.
The experiment is called Compact Lightweight Absolute Radiometer. Absolute radiometers measure the total sun radiation across the whole spectrum, from X-ray waves to infrared.
The Davos Physical Meteorological Observatory researches the sun's radiation. The institute was founded in 1907 by Karl Dornow, a German chemist and naturalist. 3 years earlier, in 1904, he arrived in Davos with his daughter, who suffered from tuberculosis. Davos is a famous climatic spa and the place to be for tuberculosis patients. This is Werner Schmutz, head of the Davos Observatory.
He was wondering why Davos should be better than other places for curing tuberculosis. He started to investigate light and became famous for his research on UV rays. He was the first to document properly how strong the UV radiation in Davos is, how it differs from the radiation in other places, and so on.
Karl Dornow looked into the effects that the sun's radiation, the climate and weather had on humans, animals and plants. His research work caused quite a stir. However, he never found any evidence of why a mountain climate should cure tuberculosis. Other researchers continued investigating the sun's radiation in Davos when Dorno died. Since the 1970s, weather balloons have been in use. In the 1980s, the Institute started to do measurements in space. Here's why.
Zwischen Boden und Weltraum geht ziemlich viel Energie verloren.
Quite a lot of energy gets lost between the Earth's ground and space. About 30% of the energy gets reflected, another 20% gets lost in the Earth's atmosphere and the clouds, let's say. In the end, only 50% arrives on the ground to warm it up.
With climate change becoming a global issue, the interest in the research work at Davos grew. From their measurements, researchers can derive information about the sun's condition, and they also hope to know more about its effect on the Earth's atmosphere. Physicist Werner Schmutz again.
Wissen tun wir.
We know that the sun has phases of different activity. In the 17th century, it was apparently inactive. Sunspots failed to appear. Lately, we haven't been observing anything like that. But we think that the sun is about to re-enter such a phase of inactivity.
Researchers suggest that this could happen in 50 to 100 years. If it does, researchers anticipate a little ice age will arrive. Hopefully, measuring probe Clara will notice the beginning of such a phase in time.
Does summer equal sunburn? Not necessarily. If you make sure you wear sunscreen, you can avoid getting burned and enjoy the sun's positive effects. We feel more alive on a sunny day because our body absorbs important nutrients. Some illnesses can be treated with or even prevented by sunlight. Our eyes also benefit from the sun's rays. But how much sun do we really need? And at what point do the health risks outweigh the benefits? Julia Ongert has the answers. They are read by Rob Turner.
Bright light, warm skin. When the sun shines, people are happy. We enjoy the sun so much because of the hormone serotonin. Sunlight drives up serotonin levels in the human body and stimulates the metabolism. The results? More energy and a good mood all round. The body also produces vitamin D thanks to sunlight. Martina Rabenberg works at the Robert Koch Institute in the Department of Epidemiology and Health Monitoring.
Vitamin D is mostly good for your bones. It helps absorb calcium from the intestine and insert it into the bones to make them stronger. In addition, vitamin D is important for building up proteins and for strengthening the immune system.
Almost one in every three Germans suffers from a vitamin D deficiency. That's why the Robert Koch Institute recommends
that you turn your face, hands and arms towards the sun without wearing sunscreen for half as long as it would take you to get sunburned. How long that is depends on your skin type.
If you're trying to soak up vitamin D, sunscreen is just an obstacle. A sun protection factor of 20 is enough to block 95% of ultraviolet rays, which hinders vitamin D production. So getting sun 2 to 3 times a week during the summer is a must. Depending on how dark your skin is, 10 to 20 minutes are usually enough. Longer periods of unprotected sunbathing can get dangerous very quickly, says Munich-based dermatologist Christoph Liebig. That's especially true for small children.
Jeder Sonnenbrand vor dem 18. Lebensjahr ist gefährlich. Das heißt, damit haben Sie
Every sunburn before the age of 18 is dangerous because it increases the risk of developing skin cancer later on. That's why it's crucial to protect children from the sun, put sunscreen on them and just keep them out of the sun during midday between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m.
zwischen 11 und 16 Uhr aus der Sonne rausgehalten werden.
Eyes are sensitive as well, according to Klaus Demberg, an ophthalmologist in Munich. And sunglasses don't always offer the best protection.
Weil alle Sonnenbrillen.
Sunglasses, they're a double-edged sword. The glasses are tinted, but then the pupils behind the glass open wider, and they aren't protected on all sides. You're wearing the glasses, but sunlight gets in from the sides and from the top.
Sondern man hat die Brille auf und von allen Seiten können die Strahlen einfallen.
Instead, the expert recommends a hat that protects the eyes. Looking directly into the sun should be avoided anyway, even during sunrise and sunset, when the light isn't as bright. As with many other things, it's all about the dosage. Eyes also seem to need natural sunlight to develop in a healthy way. Studies have shown that children who play outside in the sun are less likely to become short-sighted. So there are several reasons to stay in the sun. That's what dermatologist Christoph Liebech says as well.
Of course, we need the sun in order to live and to feel comfortable. The sun is the force of life, but it should be enjoyed responsibly, and it's important for us to protect ourselves from the sun as well.
Still to come on the program, the Galapagos Islands, both a tourism dream and an ecological nightmare. You're listening to Spectrum with me, Gudrun Heise, on DW. Online we are at dw.com/spectrum and you can follow us on Twitter at dw_SciTech. It's mainly humans who are responsible for the ecological destruction on the Galapagos Islands. Home to many rare species, these Pacific Islands, which belong to Ecuador, have become a popular tourist attraction. Nowhere else on Earth can animals be approached so closely, whether sea snakes or pelicans, penguins, giant turtles, or sea lions. Those animals don't see humans as a threat, but unfortunately, that's what we are. Michael Marek went to the archipelago of volcanic islands to find out more. Natalie Muller has the story.
It's a still day. Only a couple of boobies and frigate birds swoop over the cruise ship. The cruise liner Silver Galapagos has dropped anchor next to Genovesa Island. It's only 8 o'clock in the morning, but it's already hot and humid. Genovesa is among the northernmost volcanic islands in the Galapagos archipelago, in the Pacific Ocean, about 1,000 kilometres off the coast of Ecuador. The first visitors to the area in the 16th and 17th centuries marvelled at the many tame birds that approached them and at the big lizards, turtles and sea lions that barely flinched when people walked up to them. But these newcomers would turn out to be a disaster for some of the local wildlife species.
The most prominent example of a local species that nearly went extinct is the Galapagos turtle.
Axel Krumzik is a marine conservation expert with the Worldwide Fund for Nature, or WWF, in Germany. His area of responsibility includes the Galapagos Islands. Today, the Galapagos giant tortoise is an endangered species. In the 16th century, there were more than 200,000 of these massive animals in the Galapagos. By the 1970s, just 3,000 were left. And today, the population is about 20,000. Several subspecies have already died out. Every year, tens of thousands of tourists enjoy the exclusive and expensive pleasure of visiting this secluded world on cruise ship tours, and their numbers are increasing. 97% of the land area and 99% of the surrounding waters in the Galapagos archipelago are part of the Galapagos National Park and are under environmental protection. The area is administered by the National Park Authority, based in the town of Puerto Ayora, on the second largest island, Santa Cruz. But does the behaviour of the Galapagos penguins change if tourists walk around between adult birds and their young? Is that stressful for the animals? And what's the danger of contamination from spores or seeds carried in on tourists' clothing?
Ein sehr großes Problem ist das der invasiven Arten. Das betrifft Flora und Fauna.
Invasive species are a huge problem for both flora and fauna. They're often parasites or microbes that are carried in from elsewhere. They could be in the ballast water of ships or in tourists' luggage. The checks at the airport have improved significantly over the past few years. But the case of the mangrove finch is one example of what can happen. Today, the mangrove finch is on the brink of extinction. It's now one of the rarest birds in the world.
So dass dieser Mangrovenfink kurz vorm Aussterben steht. Einer der seltensten Vögel der Welt mittlerweile.
Since 2012, stricter rules have been in force for trips to the Galapagos. Before then, cruise ships were allowed unrestricted access to the 13 main islands. Today, there's a 14-day rule. Any particular ship can only call at each of the 13 islands once every 2 weeks. But tourists aren't the only challenge facing the island's ecosystems. In 1959, the Galapagos Islands were protected as a national park, and in 1978, they were declared a UNESCO World Natural Heritage Site. Since then, tourism has been growing each year, helping many people who live on the islands to prosper. But the impacts of tourism weren't well managed. In 2007, the archipelago was placed on the red list of threatened World Heritage Sites. The Ecuadorian government responded by tightening the rules for both residents and tourists. The effort had some success, and in 2010, the archipelago was removed from the red list. With about 40% of the plant and animal species on the Galapagos endemic, so found nowhere else in the world, achieving the right balance between tourism and ecosystem conservation is difficult. 60 years ago, around 2,500 people lived on the archipelago. Today, there are 30,000. Their trash, their cars, and their cats and dogs are wreaking ecological havoc. That also goes for germs and parasites that arrive with imported foods and, of course, the pollution from visiting ships. But without tourism, the island's residents would suffer, says Galapagos guide Fernando Ortiz.
The Galapagos Islands is a $550 million a year business for Ecuador. Yeah, that's money is something that everybody understands. Basically, there is an interest from the Ecuadorian government and from many locals to keep the islands the way they are. Actually, conservation means trying to keep both ecosystems, the land and the marine ecosystem, viable and generating those processes that can support the life that we all come to see over here. If you ask any visitor to the Galapagos Archipelago, what is their main expectation? They will tell you, oh, I want to see this animal or that animal, and so on. Galapagos is not a zoo.
About 80 cruise ships are registered with the National Park Administration for landing rights, and only small ships with a shallow hull and no more than 100 passengers on board are allowed to explore the islands. The Park Administration also monitors the ship's routes by satellite.
We are just letting people know that Mother Nature rules. At least over here, she is the one that puts the conditions. She's the one to deliver the goods if she wants to do it. This is really a natural experience. You know, sometimes you get to see stuff, the stuff you actually paid your well-earned money to see. But some other times, those animals you were expecting to find, they're just not there. You know, they decided to go someplace else for whatever reason, you know. It's really, for me, I think one of the messages we should try to convey to our guests.
A And that brings us to the end of this week's program. You can always listen again or download the podcast at dw.com/spectrum. We're also on SoundCloud and iTunes. Spectrum comes to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. From me, Gudrun Heise, sound engineer Max Zimmer and all the other members of the Deutsche Welle Science team, thanks for listening and goodbye. Here comes the sun.